Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Sunny Mary Meadow podcast. I'm your host, Liz Fidler, and today we are going to dive into part two of our mini-series on productivity and efficiency for your flower farming. If you go back to part one, if you haven't listened yet, go back to the previous last week's episode and listen to part one. That was all about planning. Part two is all about planting, and part three will be about harvesting. So we know the importance of planning and getting really specific of what and how much you are going to grow based on what you can sell. Now, this podcast mini series is directed at those that are really turning their passion for growing cut flowers into a business, not just a hobby business that pays for their hobby, but trying to get really efficient with your expenses and reduce your costs of labor and just make the flowers that you grow more profitable and being able to sell them at a premium. So this might not apply to everyone if you are someone that doesn't necessarily monitor their profits, but if you are someone that is trying to turn this into a real business and have it be your primary source of revenue or whatever that might look like for you, then this is the episode for you. So at the end of this, on July 22nd, it's a Monday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, we are having a live Q&A webinar. And it's not just me, it is Emily from Tilmore. Now, we're going to talk about some Tilmore products in here, but Tilmore is a company that I stumbled upon them on Instagram. There was another grower, and she's going to come on the episode later, but she had a video of her bed layer. So it's biodegradable plastic that breaks down, and this bed layer lays the drip lines and lays the bed into the soil and kind of turns the ends up so that the bed is laid and you don't have to do it by hand. You don't have to do it with staples. You're not burning. And then you use a dibbler to go through. And it just, my mind was absolutely blown because it would take an entire week worth of work and have it done in half a day. So I started going down a rabbit hole on this company's website and researching it. And I reached out to them and I said, hey, I have this podcast. Do you guys want to chit chat? And then we started looking at what tools I would need on my farm. And I'm really hoping we'll see what ends up happening, but I know that there's going to be hopefully some opportunity. I definitely have a huge wish list of what I'm budgeting and planning to buy from their business because I know that it's going to pay off. And I ended up getting the dibbler from them because by the time we were talking on the podcast, I'm like, well, I am not going to need a bed layer mid-May. Like I need a bed layer mid-April or whatever it might be. And some of the things that, you know, they're different precision tools for weeding, et cetera. But Tilmore is a company that works with small growers. And I know calling my business small is something that gets me a little fired up, but compared to traditional farming, the tractors and equipment that we use are smaller. So in about a month, I am giving a keynote speech at the North Central Regional Food Business Center. And my specific contact is someone from the North Dakota Farmers Union. But essentially, traditional agriculture is going on years and years of experience, and flower farming in the sense that so many of us are doing it is unique that we can only survive as businesses if we sell direct to the consumer at retail pricing, not wholesale pricing. So agritourism and agritainment are all kind of part of it because the value in the flowers, in the product comes from taking the customers behind the scenes with us. And that gets expensive. So my U-pick areas, whatever that might be, they have to look nice. They have to look weeded. This has to be a place where customers want to hang out and spend the premium price on the flowers. And so I'm really excited as we dive into this a little bit to talk about some of the tools that Tilmore has invented essentially to help us get through it. But starting with all of it, we go back into crop planning and field design. In part one of the mini series, I talked about my crop planning course that I have. And essentially that's how I pick exactly what to grow and how much to grow it, when to plant it, etc. And you can find all of these links in the episode notes, especially the link to the webinar where, like I said, Emily from Tilmore is going to be joining me, but you can find a link to my crop planner. You can find a link to my crop planning course, whatever that might be. But in the fall is when I order my plugs to be shipped. I order from a company called Farmer Bailey. I think I'm going to be switching it up and just going through my Ball rep because they both distributors or they both sell, Grow and Sell is the company who actually plants the flowers. It comes from the same place. And essentially you pick the week they are grown to order. So you have to order them, you know, if it's Lysianthus, you have to order them 12 weeks in advance because they start them for you. Once you order them, once you pay for them, they start it. Although with Ball, you don't have to pay until the spring, which that's probably why I'm switching from Farmer Bailey to Ball, because I don't want a $5,000 bill in the fall. I want that bill in the spring. So anyway, Grow and Sell will make them to order for you. And you always pick the Monday, so the week of whatever. And for me, traditionally, they have arrived and they have the Grow and Sell box. They come straight from Grow and Sell. And if I order them for a Monday, they come Wednesday or Thursday. And then they need a few days to harden off. So I plan on planting them the following Sunday or Monday. I want to get them really watered. I want to get them acclimated to the weather. I want them to kind of sit outside in the sun for half days, etc. But really planning on when you're going to plant those flowers. Now, I have not planted a lot of things to be blooming in June around here because traditionally I've kind of needed a break. However, now that I have 1,000 peony plants that I can cut from, that has changed. Now I want flowers blooming in June. So I think next year I'm going to plan on anything that's cool hardy. I'm going to have it in the ground by like April 25th, something like that. And then I'm going to utilize my high tunnels a little bit differently next year to have stock and bupleurum and orlia and those flowers that can be blooming in June to supplement my peonies and my blue thistle and whatever is blooming there. So I think, you know, just making sure that whatever you have ordered, try to stagger that plant time so that you can also stagger that harvest time. If I had to plant everything as soon as the last frost date, you know, May 15th around here, that would be such a struggling week. Whereas this year, I had most everything planted by then already. I just kind of staggered and succession planted. However, remember Brent, we used to call him Flower Farmer Fiance. Now he's Flower Farmer Husband, or Hot and Handy Husband, as I like to call him. But, you know, that's for me. But so he broke his ankle in February. So he is actually, as I'm recording this, it's Sunday, July 7th. This is coming out Monday, July 8th. So he broke his ankle the end of February. I bought him a snowmobile for Christmas, and he, yeah, dislocated and broke his ankle in the mountains of Wyoming in February. So he was off of work and he was in between surgeries, and ultimately he could move around for a couple hours a day and that was about it. And then he'd have to elevate it. So he was just kind of putzing around with all of the drip lines and then the fabric and just getting really precise on, you know, doing those tasks completely rather than I used to do them one row at a time. So then we'd lay the drip lines, but then you can't turn on the drip lines until all of the drip lines are ready. And the way we do it in our field is we have a row of flowers, row of grass, row of flowers, row of grass. So there's a 4-foot grass walkway in between every single row. And it took a lot of planning. It took a lot of work on the front end, but it's a very enjoyable experience for my U-pick flower pickers, the mornings in the middle. And so we just try to get all of the drip lines completely done, because last year I ran into problems where not every row was done. So I couldn't turn them on yet. Every single row, we'd either till it or prep the bed or whatever we were going to do. Then we'd lay the drip lines. Then we'd lay the fabric. Then I would plant that row. And we'd have to go get the T-posts with the strings on them to try to make the rows straight. And when I say we, I mean Brent, because I don't care about straight rows, but he cares about them significantly. And we couldn't turn on the water until they were completely planted. So it was like late May before I could even turn those drip lines on, because you can only turn on, you know, when you turn down, the whole thing turns on, the drip lines that we have. And so I was running around with like overhead hoses, and it was just a disaster. And so trying to get those drip lines completely laid first, then all of the fabric, then putting in the plants. So just really batching up that work, because otherwise you're going back and forth, getting the equipment, you know, different equipment. It's just easier and quicker to, you know, completely focus on one type of task versus everyone doing everything. I mean, we know that with assembly lines in factories, not everyone is start to finish building the same thing. They are working on a section of it because it is faster and more efficient, and you're not switching back and forth between tasks. And it takes a little bit of time to get a groove down. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about my Dibbler that I got from Tilmore. And again, I have a link to their website on there, but you go to their website and you can differentiate if you are a row crop farmer, if you have a vineyard, if you are a homesteader, or if you are a market grower. And that is going to filter in the kind of products that they have. And this will be a dream for you, going to their website and just looking around and making your wish list. And if you're anything like me, it's going to get real long. But my Infinite Dibbler that I got, it leaves an impression in the soil and it pokes holes, or you can have it poke holes into the plastic, not the DeWitt plastic that I have right now, but it provides accurate spacing for your transplants. So you can have row spacings anywhere from 3 inches to 32 inches, and the plant spacings anywhere from 3 inches to 41 inches. So it marks the rows for easier and more accurate planting. And you can easily move the wheels to offset the planting, and the adjustments are just made with a flathead screwdriver. And it is so great for those plants that you need a good distance between rows, for things like your stirrup hoe, or if you use their tractor implements, such as the basket weeder, which I'm going to be looking into next year. If we do some of our flowers more in a field setting, just trying to look at what that's going to look like. But essentially my feverfew, my eucalyptus, all of those things that I do 12 inch spacing so that I can fit the stirrup hoe in between the rows and just drag it real quick by hand. There is also another tool. It's called the Evox electric wheel hoe. And just look on the website at that. It looks amazing. It has like 5 different kind of attachments on the back for cultivating the soil to keep that weed bed down. So I used a hand dibbler for my Lysianthus because I didn't have this wheeled one yet. And it hadn't come in the mail yet. And I, like I said, I just found out about this company sometime in March or April. And the more I started researching them, and then I started chatting with them, like I said, they're such an amazing company that's out there for the smaller scale growers, because traditional farming, traditional row crops, traditional, you know, corn, beans, whatever, they are a culmination of years and years and years and decades of experience and, you know, learning from parents who have done it for decades, or other people in the industry who have, or, you know, specific classes on that. You know, there's a system down already. And yes, some things are tweaked, but for the most part, trying to grow at a scale such as we are, and the certain number of, you know, of course, flower farming has been around forever. Of course, there are large scale flower farms, but a lot of them are meant for wholesale production. And so trying to turn it into a retail farm is a very different game. And it's fun to be on part of this industry that's just trying to learn to do it better. So my Dibbler, I did it by hand, the Lysianthus, and I eyeballed what I thought was 6 inches. And oh my goodness, those rows are so crooked. They're probably anywhere from honestly 4 to 8 inches apart. Every single Lysianthus is. My math at the end of how many plants I should have been able to fit in the bed was way off. I had an extra like 80 Lysianthus at the end that should have been able to be squeezed into the bed. And if you know anything about the spacing or the netting for Lysianthus, I probably lost a couple hundred dollars by not having it spaced properly. And then my wheeled Dibbler came. Now we have the kind that can be connected to a 3-point hitch behind our tiller, behind our John Deere tractor. However, it also has a bar that you can hold by hand. It's like a wooden, I don't know what you call it, dowel, something. And then you can pull it down behind you. That's the way we have used it thus far, because we were inside the high tunnel and it just worked easier. Whereas next year, I think that's how I'm going to be using it, is just marking the path. And you still have to dig the holes, you know, with a hand dibbler or whatever, or you can use, I do have a plug transplanter. It's basically hip high and you step down, and then it's a little tube that you drop the transplant into. It works okay, but you need to have two people. It's not the Pro Plugger from Johnny Seeds. It's one that I bought on Amazon, and I'll include that note in there, but it's a pre-season transplanting tool. And it's this long pipe that you can drop the plug into, and then it puts it exactly where the hole is. I'm not doing a very good job of describing it. So it is a seedling transplanting tool, and it's this stainless steel pipe that essentially you can drop the plant into. So you insert the tool, you put the seedling into the tool, and then pull the handle, and then you pull the tool out from the soil. And it has this like mouth at the bottom where the blades basically open up and the tool goes into it. Like I said, I used it last year, and I honestly, if I'm being honest, I just didn't know where it was. I just didn't use it. But it works best if you have two people, whereas I was down there anyway. So now you have to have a second person go through and basically pinch the soil on either side of your plugs to really get them in there, because obviously you can't just leave them sitting there without putting the soil back on top of them. And I think that this tool would work best if you had three people. If you have one person running the tool with two handles and the foot, you have a second person taking the tray, dropping it into the stainless steel pipe, and then, you know, just moving along that. And then a third person coming along behind you to pinch the soil and put it back in. That is the best and most efficient way to do it. And, you know, next year I'll probably try to have that available. Whereas this year I was doing things on my own. So I will yeet the tray. That's what we're calling it. We're calling it yeeting, where you just literally turn the tray of plugs upside down and you slap it, and all of the lisianthus fall out, or all of the eucalyptus, or all the scabiosa, so that you're not pulling the seedlings out at the base of the seed. And I do find that it works a little bit better if they're drier, if the seedlings are, I mean, you don't want them completely dry, but as you're trying to get your things out of your trays, they just come out easier if they're not super wet. And then I go through and I used my hand dibbler after I used this wheel dibbler from Tillmore, and I'd have the dibbler in my right hand, and then I'd grab the plant with my left hand. So dibbler, plant, pinch with my, you know, my left thumb and first finger, and then put them back in. So I was able to, once I had the wheel dibbler with the holes already marked for my scabiosa, my aster, my eucalyptus, I saved about 2 hours compared to just eyeballing it. Plus I didn't have those 80 plants left over. I literally did the math and it worked out perfectly based on the spacing and how many were supposed to be per row. And it worked so well. I think next year I'll use it for even just marking those things that I typically dig with a trench or whatever. I did use it for my basil and my feverfew and my lemon basil, where I just kind of dig them in rows, and I used the dibbler just to make the lines straight. And then I went through and I used a hoe to just make the trenches.
Taking a quick break from the episode to talk about QuickBooks. I used to use a payroll company because I W-2 my employees, because if you're in Minnesota, you know that you can't get away with just 1099-ing someone when they should be W-2 because of all the new sick and safe laws. So having an established payroll system in place is your best bet, and I do it all through QuickBooks. I used to pay this company like $70 a month, and I still had to send the amounts and the hours to them, and QuickBooks just does it for you. It would take me 10 minutes to send that email, and now it takes me 25 minutes total. I mean, there's my $70 a month that I used to pay this accounting firm. So the best part is my employees can handle all of it on their end, entering their personal information, like their social security number, their bank account, all of that, and I don't have to ever see it. So I cannot stress enough how great QuickBooks is if you need to do a payroll. So head to the episode notes and you will get an exclusive 30% off for 6 months offer if you use my code. This is 20% off more than you will ever find on the regular website. So make sure you use my code. Thanks.
The fabric that I use in my YouPick sections is, it's the DeWitt fabric, and I'll put links in the episode notes. And I have always just burned holes. I've eyeballed them with a propane torch. I am definitely interested in going forward buying any fabric that has pre-made holes because it takes so much time. And again, when I'm trying to get more efficient with my farm, as I'm trying to sell literally 26,000 tulips in the spring and trying to plant at the same time, it just doesn't work. And so to pay an extra 20, 30 bucks for the holes already pre-made from Johnny's versus taking 2 to 3 hours, my time, 2 to 3 hours is worth more than 20 to 30 bucks. And if you're paying employees and you're paying staff, or even if you have volunteers, their time is finite. Time is not infinite and it is not a free resource. And so I go through and now going forward, so now I don't have to burn those holes because the fabric lasts probably 10 years. And so I think I'm going on year 3 of most of my fabric and it looks great. We haven't had to replace any of it yet, but going forward, if I have to replace some rolls of fabric, I will definitely do the pre-cut ones. The Instagram reel that I saw that was put on by another grower was the plastic layer. And it's designed for laying 3 foot and 4 foot plastic and up to 2 rows of drip tape at the same time, where it can hold the 2 rows of drip tape. It has the built-in carrier for the second roll of plastic mulch. And like I said, the plastic mulch is biodegradable and it's an adjustable bed shaper for laying the mulch so that it takes the edges of the fabric or of the plastic. I keep saying fabric because that's what I say, but the plastic and it puts the dirt over top of it. And so you don't need any other tools. You can adjust it for the tension. And it is just amazing to watch this thing work. Now, for me in my YouPick section, I don't think it's going to be a good fit because it has to have mounded up dirt, but I have 23 acres of tillable soil. Right now it's all soybeans. No, we did like a third of an acre of wildflowers, but the rest of it is tillable soybeans. And I am curious about turning an acre or two into growing for my dahlias as we expand on that, not just the YouPick section, but using a bed layer for that, trying to get the trenches. And I guess what I would be curious about is if I use the bed layer for the path in between the dahlias rather than planting within them. I don't know. It has to be kind of in a field because you dig these rows and then there's obviously a row of dirt in between with the bed layer, but this is great for traditional vegetable farming. And it's a lot more production than agritourism is what my opinion is going to be on that. This is not the customer experience where they want to be frolicking in between the rows. So I think it's just a lot different than what I have going on. But I think as I expand the amount of flowers that I'm growing, this would be something that it's the only way that I could probably do it. So another thing that I am really looking forward to trying next year is I saw another grower do this and my mind was absolutely blown. We try to dig trenches for our dahlias instead of digging individual rows. So our dahlias, we can fit 120 dahlias per row. Right now I have 5 rows of dahlias. So I have 600 dahlias planted. I think last year I had about 400. So right now I have 600, but I got rid of a lot of the colors that I didn't like. And I was able to sell off a lot of those varieties that are cute, but not super productive. And I kept maybe 10 of them instead of 100 of them like last year. And so my plan is to really expand on the dahlias that I have because a lot of my customers want the tubers. Now we ended up just digging trenches with a shovel, but it was not great. We basically should have just dug 120 individual holes per row. But I saw another flower farmer take the pallet forks for a skid steer or John Deere tractor or whatever, and put the 2 pallet forks together and then tip it down on the ground and use it to dig a straight trench. And of course, it was after we were completely finished. And I was like, oh my God, why didn't we do that? I have not used fabric for my dahlias because I have found that it is such a mess to clean it up in the fall. I'm actually trying to get away from using so much fabric because it is very, very labor intensive. And like I said, when you are starting to hire out a lot of the work, if you listen to the private Petaling Perishable Products podcast, so if you've taken the course, you get lifetime access to the Petaling Perishable Products podcast, where I really, really dig deep into like behind the scenes things and numbers. And we go over my balance sheets and bookwork and profit and losses for the quarter and whatever. So if you take the Petaling Perishable Product course, you'll get access to that for free. But basically, I am using my bagger for my lawnmower and using the grass clippings for mulch in between the plants for the dahlias. I'm trying not to get the dahlias too drenched in nitrogen. And so I don't have the grass clippings right on them. But basically, if I used fabric for the dahlias, you know, in the fall, I would hack them off. And I just feel like the holes would have to be so big anyway, it would not be helpful. Whereas using the grass clippings in between them. And so then we'll do three rows of trenches, and hopefully with the skid loader, or we also have a John Deere. I have no idea what it is. It's a garden tractor of some sort, but we bought it because of our U-pick section. We didn't want to be driving our skid steer on it. And then it has a 60-inch tiller on the back, and it has another like brush mower on the back. So in the fall, we just drive down the rows with the brush mower. We just mow down the zinnias, we mow down the snapdragons, we mow down everything. And then after we do that once with the brush mower, then we take our John Deere 730X lawnmower with the bagger attachment on it, and then we can bag up all those little mulched up pieces of the plant. So a lot of different equipment that we've invested in over the years, but they all have their place and they keep it all looking nice. And like I said, it saves so many hours on fall cleanup. So the next thing I want to talk about is planting plugs versus seeds. Now, I have done an entire episodes on buying plugs versus starting flowers in seed trays. Ultimately, for me, with everything that I have going on over at my farm, buying plugs is definitely the more profitable way to do it versus taking the time to grow the seedlings. However, for the purpose of this episode, we're going to talk about transplanting trays versus direct seeding. And I don't care if you buy the plugs completely done or if you start the trays yourself, we are looking at, in April or May, a full tray of plants that are ready to be transplanted. So I've done it different ways, but I had two rows of zinnias and nigella and bupleurum. And if I do plugs, I pay about 28 cents per plant by the time they're shipped to me, ready to transplant. But so that row could cost me $120 in plants, or it could be $10 worth of seeds. But instead of 1 hour of weeding, it's 4 hours of weeding that initial couple times, because again, the plants grow so much faster, and it's just the weeding just goes so much quicker when you're weeding around a plug. Plus the time to actually plant them. You know, I can plant a whole row of plugs in 30 minutes, whereas if I'm doing little individual seedlings, it's just a lot more tedious. And so if two people are weeding at $20 an hour, it's $160 plus the $10 of seeds versus $120 plus the $40. So the cost is about the same, if not cheaper, for the plugs when it comes to actually weeding them. But here's the rest. What is the opportunity cost? I only have my employees that are working here on the farm about 20 hours per week. So now I can have them making bouquets or doing other things that actually generate revenue instead of spending the entire month of June pulling weeds, crabgrass, trying not to get these tiny little seedlings uprooted, you know, amaranth, whatever. So for me, with planting next year, I am full on trays, no more seeds. Like every year I do less and less. And now I pretty much don't start anything in trays. I buy plugs for everything. And then I was like, well, so it's either buying plugs or direct seeding. I'm not going to start anything in trays. And now I'm giving up the direct seating. It just does not, it's not an efficient use of my time. And that June of pulling weeds is so rough around here. Again, my farm though is a, I'm offering a very, very premium U-Pick experience. It is very different than any other U-Pick in the area. It is pristine. It is not weeds everywhere. The grass is level. It's 4-foot walkways between the grass. We have a little shaded area with picnic tables and we have coffee and it's lovely. And I don't want weeds everywhere. And I want you to be able to access every single row. That's the cost of having it look nice. And that's why I charge a premium. So nobody gets to come here unless they're buying a watching ticket. They don't get to come and just show up. You have to buy a ticket ahead of time, whether you're picking or not. Another thing that I recommend for planting as you're trying to get efficient on it is engaging the community in the process. So for example, I coach the floriculture team for FFA for actually 3 different area schools. And I shouldn't say I coach them. I put on some workshops. I've helped them out. I have a big dream, a big hefty goal. And if anyone is listening from Minnesota and you want to get involved in helping this, like, let me know because I absolutely want to make this happen. So in high school, I was on the livestock judging team in FFA. And then we won state my freshman year. And so I had to pick a new CDE. And that's how I stumbled upon floriculture. Well, like my little brother is on a livestock judging scholarship. He just finished his freshman year. He's down by El Dorado, Kansas. But there are so many different workshops during the summer at different colleges and university for livestock judging. But to my knowledge, there's really nothing like that for floriculture. And so I want to host a high school FFA workshop in the summertime, like a camp, a floriculture camp. And anyway, but now I'm getting off on a tangent and talking about my big dreams. But I think that would be so cool. But these FFAs that I have helped me, I've kind of done like an in-kind, okay, can you come and help with fall cleanup? Or actually the one, the Ricori FFA, their FFA kids help with the cleanup for my daughter's school fundraiser at the end of the night. They help put away tables and chairs. We have this huge, it's called Rocktoberfest, and there's like 10,000 people that come. It's really, really fun. It's the end of September in St. Joe, Minnesota. I'm on the committee. But that's one way that, okay, I help with your floriculture. I help with this. I help with that. And we do pay them. Like we give them money. We make a donation to their organization. But again, like help each other out. And so just enlisting in those clubs. I know some people that have had, you know, the Pheasants Forever has had, you know, the local 4-H club or whatever, do something and then in return, give them a donation. But yeah, just trying to enlist in ways that, you know, what services do you bring that you can legally trade or barter in kind? You know, I'm all about following the rules. So I'm not saying free labor. I'm not saying, you know, don't report anything. I'm just saying, you know, just get creative. So there is no way I could have covered all of the planting tools and tips and tricks that we use on our farm. But I just want you to continue to get creative and innovative and find ways to do things better and faster, because that's how you're going to make more money on your flower farm, is by reducing those expenses. And think about those tasks that you spend so much time doing and how you can do them more effectively, more efficiently. You know, I'm all for, you know, taking a little butter knife and one by one planting those zinnia seeds, but it just takes so much time. And so getting your wish list of those things that are going to be the most profitable and pay off for your farm. I'm really excited for this webinar with Tillmore. Like I said, Emily is going to be joining me. Click the episode notes to get signed up for the webinar. It's completely free. It's a Q&A. You can ask us anything about all 3 parts of the mini series, but Emily is going to be an excellent resource there for the planting portion and different tools and tips that we can have available. But let me know what you guys think. Reminder that we do have the Facebook group for the episodes, and we're trying to get a little bit better about adding the blog posts in there. Everything is put into a blog post now. We're getting really efficient here over at the Sunny Mary Meadow podcast. And I'm also super excited. If you've been following me on stories for a while, you know, we have some big things happening at the farm that I haven't told you guys completely about. The Peddling Perishable Products people know what's happening, but essentially I'm taking this little dream that used to be a tiny little farm stand, and We're just growing. We'll put it that way. So thank you so much for listening and tune in next week for part 3.
Thank you so much for listening to the Sunny Mary Meadow podcast. We actually have a different website for you to go to now, and we are so excited. So sunnymarymeadow.com is still my flower farm and ways to come here and get flowers. But the podcast is going to be hosted on sunnymarymeadowcoaching.com. So make sure you head over there and check out the new blog section. That's right. We found a way to put every episode into written blog form, all of the links, and you can even search by topic to find all of the episodes there. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and please consider leaving a 5-star review so you can find it. You can find us on Facebook. Sunny Mary Meadow is still for the flower farm, but we have a group, Sunny Mary Meadow Podcast Flowerers, and that is the group for the podcast. And then, of course, Instagram at Sunny Mary Meadow is exactly where you're going to find everything. Thank you so much for listening.
Flowers, flowers, we love flowers. Sunny Mary Meadow, they smell so good. SunnyMaryMeadow.com.